This edition of The Wellness Prescription is brought to you by Healthy Planet, your source to healthy living.
Welcome to The Wellness Prescription on 105.9 The Region. I'm Dr. Claudia. Thank you for joining me. So back on the show is Dr. Natasha Kalia, otherwise known as Dr. Tash. You all know her. She's been on the show several times. She's a pediatric ER doctor at SickKids, and we're going to discuss another bunch of issues topics on children's health. I thought today we would discuss picky eaters and vitamin supplementation. So welcome to the show, Dr. Tash.
Thank you for having me, and it's always a pleasure.
Well, picky eaters. So what do we do about these picky eaters?
I love how straightforward. It's like, let's get just down to it. Let's first start with the fact that picky eaters in pediatrics is not uncommon. And again, most of the time I spend is in the emergency department, but I find that parents just, they will ask that question to every pediatrician, because really managing picky eaters is multifactorial. It's not just a one stream of you change one thing and all of a sudden everything goes. But I think we should also normalize picky eaters, because picky eating could be either, you know, part of that natural growth of feeling and learning and adapting to textures, adapting to flavors, which we have to recognize that it's also what we're exposing them to, right? At home, you know, at grandparents' house, at whoever's doing kind of the babysitting, at daycare. And so normalizing picky eating and also making sure that we don't make children feel bad for their picky eating, and trying to look at what has worked for other people. And what I mean by that is really having the right resources in place. And that includes your medical professional, because then you've got the extreme of picky eating where your child is really just not getting all the nutrients that you're hoping they're going to get. And you never wanted to go insofar that lack of getting a good balance. And again, when we're talking about balance, I'm not talking about black and white, everything's 100%, right? I'm talking about, you know, at least 80% of what the expected nutrients of all macro and micronutrients that kids are supposed to get for their growth, brain, body, so on and so forth. And making sure that you're not at a dangerous point where they're not getting a good combination, and then that's going to stunt growth or brain development. So from a picky eating standpoint, of the title of picky eating, this is common. If you're a parent out there and your child's a picky eater, don't think you're alone. There are good support groups or good things in place. But I also would bear caution on when you start deciding to have your child over-tested and over-supplemented, because then there's also harm to the extreme of that. So having the right people in place is super important.
We have to supplement with something that may be similar, or maybe present that same food later on in a different way. So instead of giving it to them raw, where it looks strange and feels strange, maybe like cook it or steam it or mash it or add it to something or other. I feel like that is probably the best approach. And knowing that right away, your child is not going to become malnourished by not liking certain foods.
Yes, I agree. We can't say that picky eating is okay. I introduced you a little bit of broccoli, you don't like it, that's a picky eater. It does mean, though, that you got to be able to define the differences. So just because they don't like a texture of something does not make them a picky eater. And when it comes to your question on whether, you know, do you eat the cheese over the chicken? A nourished child, a child getting food, is definitely more important than a child not eating at all. And now you're restricting everything they're eating. And so there's little tips and techniques that you can work with. And there's a lot of good nutritionists out there and, you know, dietitians out there that can work with your child and work with you in determining, you know, what are the good things that they really like to eat and making sure you don't go overboard in those. And what are the things that they still won't eat? And you can determine what other supplementation can be made. And when I say supplementation, I'm not referring to let's jump to a vitamin. I'm referring to supplementing with a different grain. I'm referring to supplementing with a different fruit. I'm talking about supplementing with something that you can grow in a garden or buy at a produce store or something like that as the first choice of supplementing. So if you're not getting enough, you know, iron, what are the different things that can bring iron to the table? That's not necessarily a gummy, you know, and this might not be the popular opinion, but it is you know, an opinion of most physicians who understand that a healthy child, a healthy adult, and being nourished with the proper vitamins and minerals from food is actually multiple factors. One, it's the balanced diet. Two, it's your healthy organs, because your organs need to function to break down the food and absorb the food and metabolize that food. And then making sure that you 100% are not deficient in something before you start supplementing in something. Because most kids have really good organs. They're healthy organs. They're growing organs. And unfortunately, there's lots of kids out there that do have malabsorption issues. That is a diagnosis of a genetic disorder that they do have, that they're born with, or a gut issue because they're born with, you know, short gut, or they're diagnosed with something else. So it's a multi-prong approach before saying, I'm going to completely take that off the table. I'm not going to find anything that's like that. It really is about approaching those three factors and figuring out which one you can emphasize more and who can you work with to make it better.
Yeah. And I didn't realize that. And so it's like you have to be almost an investigator when you're a pediatrician or a doctor for that matter, any doctor, because you have to ask the leading questions to find out what may be the underlying cause of something.
Correct. And the flip side to that is then it becomes, okay, well, then I'm only going to give them what they like. That's okay. But what happens is it becomes extreme to the point of, I don't want to fight with my child. I don't want to make them upset. You're still the parent. And giving them what they like should also come with trying other things. It's not just, I'm going to use the most extreme thing that I've actually heard. Is, you know, a parent once said to me, my child doesn't like to drink. They were in water drinking age, and you know, water is super important. It's like, my child doesn't like to drink water at all. So all we give them is milk. That's not an uncommon thing to hear from parents. And I'm like, okay, I understand. But what other ways have you provided the water? Is it water by itself? Like, here's 8 ounces, chug this water. Or is it you provide in smaller amounts throughout the day and you accompany it with a piece of fruit, pending that they're able to chew that fruit and it's not dangerous for them? Or did you provide maybe a little bit of apple juice in it, which is just a little bit of sugar, and they now start liking the water? Because what people forget too is, specifically with milk, too many milk products at a really young age actually leads to iron deficiency anemia. So then this parents come in and they go, my child is so tired, they're pale, you know, they're asking these questions, and you go, okay, let's talk about their diet. And all of a sudden you start finding out they're drinking 20 ounces every 4 hours of homogenized milk. And then on top of that, it's cheese and it's all these other milk. And I'm like, that is like a classic case. It's not emergent, but it is a classic case. And then you go back and you start to realize it's because they only want to give their child what they like, and not because they're sort of supplementing and experimenting with other things that could give them the exact same thing. So it's quite fascinating.
What about those little ones that they start eating? You know, they're at that age, 4 to 6 months. I'm not even sure now what the recommended age is. But let's say 6 months, they start eating more solid food and they love everything. And then all of a sudden they're 2 years old and they stop eating things that they were eating before. This is common.
Very common and very, let's normalize it. Let's normalize it. Again, it goes back to, you know, the now they're two. Their senses are completely different than what they were at 6 months. They have teeth. Things don't feel the same. Things may not taste the same. And then what you also find at that age is they'll only eat one thing and they'll eat it for like weeks. And then they don't like that even. And I find that commonly with parents is like orange slices or apple slices. And there's lots of those videos online where parents like, watch, by next week, my child's not going to want anything to do with this fruit or this vegetable. And that's also okay, because you are giving them something that's healthy, as long as you're not giving them like over the amount for the day. But, you know, it's in reasonable amounts. If that's what they want, they want. And then you move on to the next thing. But it doesn't mean you shouldn't try and come back to the thing that they just told you they didn't want anymore. It's in the moment at that time, either the structure, the texture, the taste. Maybe something happened and they ate it and they, you know, it was a bad experience for the one time and now they just don't want it. It's about really finding that balance. And let's normalize that this does happen in kids. And if it becomes so extreme that that is literally the only thing that they will eat and you're concerned, then you bring that up with your healthcare professional and you can explore the different reasons why that's happening.
When it comes to those kids that tend to be pickier, and if a parent is trying to get them to eat much more balanced, it's all great. Do you recommend certain supplements like vitamins, like, for example, vitamin D? What are your thoughts on supplementing a child with vitamin D?
I like that you asked this question, Claudia. And the reason why I think it really, as healthcare practitioners, and you can understand this as well, is that we have kind of a duty to look at all different variables when approaching a patient. And this includes pediatric patients, right? It's not just family-centered care. It's what is necessary. And so whenever a parent asks me this question, my next question to them is, why do you feel it's necessary to maybe supplement your child with vitamin D? What concerns do you have that makes you think that your child needs more vitamin D? And I usually go down and break down the different ways that children get their vitamins, absorption, everything I said earlier, but I'm never one to really push anything into a child's diet without knowing for sure why. That's the first thing. The vitamin world, again, this might not be a popular belief, and I'm going to just say this, but we do know that the vitamin world is very powerful. It's very forceful. And I think it does a very good job of convincing all of us in some way, shape, or form that we always need to add more. And I don't think at any point, because we're dealing with kids, specifically me, that we don't stop and think, well, you know, if they think they really need to add the vitamins, or they're encouraging gummies, or they're encouraging all, then for sure there's a reason for it. But that's not necessarily the truth. You know, because if you think about it, most of these supplements aren't FDA approved. They're not controlled. We don't actually know. If you really read the labels, we actually don't know how much of that gummy is truly vitamin A, vitamin D, iron. We know what it says, but because there's no control system in place where they kind of have to monitor these, we don't actually know. I'm not trying to spread fear. I'm trying to look at it as a logical thing, because at the end of the day, if this is what's being told to every family, what about the families that in their head can't afford buying those vitamins? Now they think they're at a deficiency or at a deficit compared to other families. And so my goal is always to look at the why. Why do you think that? What makes you think that? Do we know for sure? Like, does your child have symptoms that they're vitamin D deficient? And I will say vitamin D is a big one, because I think there's been a lot in the news of, like, we spend a lot of time in the winter. We spend a lot of time in the gray. And yes, vitamin D is naturally produced in the body by getting some sun, but you don't need to be in the sun 24/7 to get normal vitamin D levels. You can get vitamin D levels from a lot of green leafy vegetables. And so that's the one side of it. So I'll ask why. The other thing is, before you start any form of supplementation, I would honestly, if you're concerned about a deficiency, before you start adding, I would say get tested. Check that vitamin D level, check that vitamin A level, check that iron level before you add, because I think what we don't talk about on the flip side and what I see in the emergency department is the vitamin toxicity. And that's where kids are getting all the nutrients and vitamins they need in their food. But then now it's the supplementation with an extra vitamin here. Oh, don't worry, just take another gummy today because vitamins are good for you. Or, you know, you're getting a good balanced meal and it's like, eat more kale. It's kale is good for you, kale. But no one tells you that if you start doing that in your normal levels, a lot of kale is vitamin A, and you can get vitamin A toxicity. You start adding more gummies and you start adding more things to a kid who has normal vitamin D levels. Now you get vitamin D toxicity. Or the kid who thinks the gummies are so good and eats a handful and they have all that iron, there's iron toxicity. So we have to, if we're willing to talk about the why our parents concerned about deficiency in adding a vitamin, then we got to get comfortable about talking about that. If you do that and you don't know how much they're actually getting, there is toxicity concerns. And not everyone in the world is able to recognize that. They might actually look at the symptoms of toxicity as a deficiency. And that may be a concern. And now we're dealing with things that are not monitored. And now we're dealing with which one is it? And then we got to figure out how to make it better, right? So I think if we're willing to talk about one, we got to talk about the other as well.
And that's actually a really valid point. So I think that what you're trying to say is before you're going to consider giving your child any supplementation, have the blood work done so that they know if there is anything that's actually missing. When we come back, teenagers and protein powders and shakes. This is the Wellness Prescription on 105.9 The Region. Stay with us.
Have a question for Dr. Claudia? Call us at 416-335-1059. Tweet us at 1059 The Region or email us info@1059theregion.com. The Wellness Prescription with Dr. Claudia on 1059 The Region.
You're listening to 105.9 The Region. Welcome back to The Wellness Prescription. Before the break, Dr. Tash and I discussed vitamin supplementation in young kids. We discussed picky eaters. Now we're going to move on to talk about those preteens and teenagers who are all about the protein shakes and trying to replace a meal with protein and protein powders and protein bars. Do they need it? Is it bad for them? And how do we kind of navigate that as parents?
The bigger question is, are protein supplements even necessary for young teens, preteens? And even bigger question that we can't miss out are those teens who are athletes, who believe that even on top of regular teenage life, now they're an athlete and they're thinking, I need to build muscle and all that. There is a common misconception and belief, and trust me, as a competitive swimmer and volleyball player, I used to think the exact same thing, that, you know, athletic teenagers need more protein to help build muscle. And that the regular everyday teenager doesn't need that. Those teenagers are equally on the same playing field, and I'll explain why. Food is the best source of protein. I'm going to go back to it. Things that you can purchase without putting in a can or putting into a bar or putting into a container is always going to be the best source of protein. You know, but if you do your research, just because you look at, because then there's the, well, the piece of chicken is more expensive than the container of whey protein or whatever protein in the bars, and I'm not getting the chicken in every meal. I want to really start with, be aware that the price does not correlate with the purity of what you're buying, right? So a piece of chicken or a piece of red meat might be better for you than what you're reading on a canister. And the richest sources of protein that we know out there are lean meats, such as chicken, turkey, lean beef, fish, eggs, tofu. I'm not just thinking about meat eaters. I'm thinking about the non-meat eaters out there as well. And then all the dairy products, beans, lentils, and nuts. There's a lot of good nuts out there. So while it seems sensible, you know, that more is better when it comes to the teenagers who are like, I want protein, but I don't want a meal, so I'm going to do a protein bar or I'm going to do a shake. When it comes to protein, that's not true necessarily. Studies have shown that consuming extra protein will produce no further gain in strength, muscle mass, or size. And the reason is simple for us who understand the pathophysiology, right? To build muscle, to build strength, it's actually anabolic hormones, testosterone, that's in your body. But it requires physical training to stimulate the protein synthesis and in turn increase muscle mass. So the amount of protein you eat is irrelevant without the complete regimen. So if you think you're going to just eat a protein bar and have a protein shake, but you're going to do no exercise, which, you know, cardiovascular exercise, stretching, flexibility, if you're going to do none of that, you're not going to get what you're trying to obtain in your teenage years of, I'm going to have more bulk and I'm going to have more muscle. And in fact, high protein, low carb diets have never been recommended, period. Because what people also don't, and here's, remember I said, if we're going to talk about this part of the spectrum, we better talk about this part of the spectrum. And too much protein, we have seen, and I have seen this in regular teenagers and in athletes, where if you have too much protein, your body can't actually store the extra protein to use later like we do with carbohydrates. And we'll have to spend so much more significant energy in processing the extra protein. And you're going to use energy and water, which are two important sources for anyone's body, right? Energy, water. And that extra protein will actually be converted to fat. And that then in turn, especially protein itself, can lead to things like loss of appetite, nausea, diarrhea, and even stress out your liver and kidneys. So if we're willing to talk about, you know, why do teenagers think they need more protein? Is it because you want to get leaner? You want to build more mass? We got to stop. We have to break it down to like, if you want that, there's other ways to do it. There's other sources to do it. But also know if you still choose that pathway, these are the potential consequences and effects of what you're taking over time. And no one really wants that. No one wants to find out their teenager at 14, 15 has been pounding back protein powders, and now they have kidney issues, kidney stones, hormone imbalance. Like, we don't know. And I don't think people realize that the same as vitamins, most protein powders are currently not regulated by the FDA. This means that they may contain artificial sweeteners, heavy metals, other things that we don't know, because there's no one mandating that they keep monitoring these things. And kids need to grow. They need to grow healthy, their muscle, their bones. We don't want their growth stunted. We don't want their brain development to be stunted. And for me, unless I know for sure, and again, Claudia, don't get me wrong, like, we don't know necessarily what's in all the meat that we eat. But at the same time, I can't get myself to look at something made into a powder and put in a bar that I don't know about versus one main piece of chicken.
So what I try to tell my patients and parents of teens who are, you know, trying to inquire on adding protein powders and protein bars and making protein shakes to the daily diet is, you know, you really have to start with eating healthy, balanced meals filled with the right amount of macros and micros, so carbohydrates, proteins, and fats, in order for your body to function optimally. You don't need protein if you're getting an additional protein like a shake or a bar if you're getting the right amount of proteins. And one of the reasons why I try to discourage that as a meal replacement or in addition to is because I feel that, you know, your hormonal balance at that young age really is determined by getting proper nutrients and that proper balance. So I try to encourage children and teens to eat really balanced. And I feel like that's where they're going to get the best bang for their buck, as opposed to supplementing with the protein.
Agreed. Couldn't agree with you more about that. And it goes even to that, speaking of, you know, those same teenagers at that point is going to be like, well, then I also need a multivitamin. And it goes back to the, why do you think you need that? And what makes you feel like you need it? You know, unless you're telling me that everything, I have celiac. At first, before I knew it, every time I ate, it came out of me. So that means there was a period of 3 or 4 months where I wasn't getting iron. I wasn't getting vitamin A. I wasn't getting vitamin D. I didn't know I had celiac. I wasn't a medical practitioner. And I could feel it. I could feel deficiency. And then I went, got tested. And then I figured it out. And I knew I was deficient. But how did I get back to being at normal levels? It wasn't supplementation. It was, I started making sure I balanced out my meals and was able to maintain it without it spurting out within 10 minutes of eating it, right? Mine was an absorption issue. And that can actually happen from over protein, putting too much protein in your system. Like, getting diarrhea to a point where your body just doesn't absorb anything now, you've now put yourself in that category of deficiency without realizing it. Because if you're eating and it's going out, your body doesn't have the time to transport that across your intestine to absorb it. And now you've created a system of malabsorption, not because you had it before, but because you felt like you needed different forms of supplementation in other areas. And it is a vicious cycle. And I hope that we can educate more people on, you know, doing this properly. And this goes even for people who don't eat meat. I think we got to make sure we're very open to understanding and speaking for those who are vegetarian or vegan or have certain medical conditions or underweight because they can't absorb protein as well. That's something that now it's got to be, let's sit down with a medical practitioner, let's sit down with a dietitian, a nutritionist, something to be able to do it correctly. But that is done under the oversight of not, here's a bottle of pills that you can pay $60 for. And some other thing that's not been approved or something that we think might, it's got to be well-planned meals. And let's attempt different things that your body can take and absorb before I worry about the people who get pushed to buy things outside of a regular diet before talking about how to improve a diet and how to improve the ability to absorb. To me, that's a red flag. If all of a sudden it's like, buy this and buy this. And let me tell you, I have been guilty of being on the receiving end and believing it. I'm not innocent to it, but I am not one that's going to push it because I've been on the receiving end and realized I have fallen for that before too.
The other thing that I think is very important for parents of picky eaters and helping them to, I like the idea that you say supplement with a different food, is because I try to tell even my own children, you can't get the same benefits of the health benefits from eating broccoli every day. We do have to expand our palate and try different things and get the nutrients from different sources. So I think that's a really important point.
On top of that nutrition and on top of that food is thy health is that good cardio exercise, but exercise in the terms of like having cardio exercise, but strength training and flexibility. So stretching, take a good diet, add a little bit of that on top of it. And that's what good, healthy lifestyle and longevity comes in. And protecting yourself the best way you can to communicable diseases that we know exist out there. And we have a way of protecting ourselves and our younger ones and our immune compromised. Putting all these things together, there's going to be other things out there you can't control. But these are the things we can't control. And if we can, and we can be out there and talk about the positive messaging behind those things, then I think living a full life and a good life with those mechanisms in place is not wrong, in my opinion.
Dr. Tash, I can't thank you enough for joining me today. If listeners want to learn more about you, tell us where they can do that.
Absolutely. So I'm currently on Instagram as Dr. Tash Official, and I also have a link to my Linktree, which has all parent handouts and parent resources in there that I've personally written and cultivated, knowing what the biggest questions and concerns out there. And I try to keep them updated with new topics. I'm on Facebook, and eventually I will be on YouTube as well.
And you can always find me on Instagram at Claudia_Macchiella or my website, ClaudiaMacchiella.com. That's my show for this week. If you missed it, go to 1059theregion.com or wherever you get your favorite podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, Amazon Music, and of course, Audible. I'm Dr. Claudia. Thank you for listening, and I hope this helps you live your best life.
The Wellness Prescription was brought to you by Healthy Planet. Order online at HealthyPlanetCanada.com or go online to find a location nearest you.